Hi everyone, this is Sim.
This is Ko. Welcome to Work in Progress, a podcast that's a curation of different people, perspectives, ideas, influences, and inspiration.
Today, we are at a recording studio recording our podcast. I'm sitting opposite Komal. I'll just give a quick visual description of myself. I am wearing glasses. I have blonde highlights on my brown hair. I'm wearing a white frilly top and purple pants. I'm on the shorter side and a little podgier side.
Now it's my turn. I'm Komal. I am tall. I'm wearing a red off-shoulder top and black pants. I'm sitting very, very close to my recording mic in a cold air-conditioned room.
We hope this gives you
a little insight
to where maybe this episode is going.
This episode completely blew our minds. We were exposed to a new way of thinking, a new way of operating, and we really did start seeing the world in a different lens after this. We're very excited today to have Siddhant Shah. I'm just going to try to do a quick introduction because it's a long introduction. So Siddhant Shah is a heritage architect and accessibility consultant who's been instrumental in bridging the gap between cultural heritage and disability in India through Access for All. He's also a Stavros Niarchos scholar with a MA in Heritage Management from the University of Kent and a postgraduate diploma in Indian Aesthetics, which blew my mind, along with a bachelor's in architecture, and he's been working relentlessly. I had been introduced to Siddhant a couple of years ago through Saturday art class, but I'm just so grateful for you to come here and to have this conversation, and we really want to get and, you know, break down every aspect of what you've done and also your ambitions, you know, for the future. And we want to obviously delve into Access for All, but I don't want to introduce that. I want you to, you know, sort of.
But before we do that, I think just to set context for our listeners, there are very far and few between conversations that happen about people with disabilities. So can we just start by explaining to our listeners, how would you explain a person with disability?
Sure. Hi, everyone. This is Siddhant Shah. And since this is a podcast, I would like to give a visual description about myself for all the listeners with visual impairment and others. I am 30 years old. I have side partition hair. I wear rectangular black glasses and I'm slightly on the chubbier side. And as we are now proceeding with the whole idea of understanding disability, right? There are two ways of looking at this whole construct of disability. One is you follow what the government suggests and like identifies as prior to 2016, only 7 disabilities were identified. But after the 2016 RPWD Act, which stands for Rights for Persons with Disability, the Act identifies 21 disabilities. But if you read the list, you also come across disabilities like Parkinson's disease. You come across thalassemia. You come across dwarfism. You come across acid attack victims. But now, how does that fit into our understanding of disability, right? And the whole idea is that it's about disability, it's about disease, and it's about disorder, mm-hmm. which is put together so that there is an equal opportunity that is provided to persons with various different impairments that we are talking about in that space. So that's a very textbook understanding of what disability is. But one also needs to understand that there are disabilities that are invisible, mm-hmm. right? There are disabilities that are not classified or are listed in the things, but that doesn't mean that that doesn't allow a person to get identified or receive the equal opportunities that everybody should have. And I think these are two ways in which the group or the community or like the people get identified, and also the general public have this kind of an understanding of what is seen in the space or where you see them. Or typically you would have the identifiers of disability, right? Somebody using a crutch, wheelchair. Somebody using a wheelchair. It's so funny that people no longer consider wearing glasses
a disability.
Yeah. Because if you look at a wheelchair and a pair of glasses, they both do the same thing, right? They both are aids of accessibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If I remove my glasses, my functioning of vision is not complete, right? I need the glasses to function in a certain way. Likewise, a person who's on a wheelchair requires a wheelchair to move around, complete the task in certain ways. So that's another way of understanding the social stigma around disability and how if something becomes part of popular culture, it is no longer seen as a disability. And today, you also have people wearing glasses just to look cute and nerdy and cool on Instagram or other like social media platforms. But you still don't have anybody who's like looking at wheelchair or like, should I try that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where there are some objects that are still like an aid or a equipment, and some have now moved into the genre of an accessory.
Accessory, yeah. Correct.
Right? If you look at any of these AirPods or other things, right? Like if you just think like 10, 12 years ago, like what a typical hearing aid would look like.
Yeah.
And today everyone's popping one with different colors and all. Like it is a fantastic way of also crossing the social stigma about wearing an aid of access, which got you identified as a person with disability.
Yeah.
And third thing, I feel like third approach of looking at disability is about understanding that what really is this construct of disability, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I start talking in Greek right now, or if I start talking in ગુજરાતીમાં બોલવા લાગીશ તો ઘણા ઓછા લોકોને ખબર પડશે કે હું શું બોલું છું, રાઈટ? એન્ડ વેરી ફ્યુ પીપલ વુડ અન્ડરસ્ટેન્ડ વોટ આઈ હેવ જસ્ટ સ્પોકન બીકોઝ આઈ ચેન્જ અ મીડિયમ ઓફ કમ્યુનિકેશન, રાઈટ? સો સડનલી પીપલ બીકેમ ટેમ્પરરીલી ડિસેબલ ટુ નોટ કોમ્પ્રિહેન્ડ ધેટ ઇન્ફોર્મેશન. સો દેટ્સ વન વે ઓફ અન્ડરસ્ટેન્ડિંગ પર્મનન્ટ એન્ડ ટેમ્પરરી. એન્ડ વી આર રાઈટ નાવ સિટિંગ ઇન અ સ્પેસ વેર લાઈક ઇટ્સ અ રેકોર્ડિંગ રૂમ વેર ધ ડોર્સ આર હેવીલી ઇન્સ્યુલેટેડ બીકોઝ ઓફ ધ અકુસ્ટિક્સ, રાઈટ? એન્ડ if you have two things in your hand, you can't even push the door open.
Yeah.
So you're facing situational disability where you're not able to complete a task.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there are different ways in which you can look at disability it. And a journey in Access for All, we realized for the fact that we did not want to start as only an activist approach towards disability or a charitable approach or a medical approach, but bring in the idea of professional service that can be given in the domain of making the spaces more accessible, making different objects inclusive, be it through Braille, through sign language, by conducting workshops, by doing sensitization programs and all in corporate spaces, to even look auditing heritage sites like Red Fort. Or, you know, a recent project that we did was looking at the accessibility for Pradhan Mantri Sangrahalaya, which is the museums of Prime Minister of India.
Right.
And that at that scale, how do you bring in accessibility and inclusion? So, yes, that's the journey of Access for All and a short crash course on understanding disability.
Absolutely.
There were so many things you mentioned that I hadn't thought about before. I myself wear glasses and I never looked at it as, oh, it's something like a disability. So that was really interesting. But I just wanted to ask you, so we all live in an insulated world, like we don't really look beyond ourselves most times. So my exposure to how a person with disability actually experiences the world was very recent. I have an acquaintance whose child is visually impaired, and I had a conversation with her and it really was eye-opening about what all they experience on a day-to-day basis, like even getting out of the house. I didn't know that a footpath needs to be not graveled but little lifted for people who are visually impaired to be able to access it properly or use it properly.
True.
And then even public transport for that matter, we don't really see so many people with maybe wheelchairs or what are accommodations done for people with disabilities in these spaces. So that was my introduction, I guess, to this world. But what was yours? I would love to know more about that, because I don't think it comes inherently.
True. And I think that's so recent. So I give a lot of TED Talks. Given over 17 TEDx talks and like spoken at various different platforms in schools, at corporate level, at international platforms. And one journalist asked me a question, and I think that really shook me, and it took me time to answer that. And she asked me, Siddhant, would you have done this if your mother did not acquire visual impairment, right? And I think my journey began in this space because while I was studying architecture, my mother acquired visual impairment, and that really changed the way, like almost like how 75% of the population in India acquires disability, and suddenly the life takes 360 degree turn for the person and for the immediate family as well, you know. For the longest time, my family did not disclose that my mother had acquired visual impairment. They were scared about the social stigma it brings along with that. Also, to that level, where I also started realizing that as a designer, is there something that I could do in this domain? And I was extensively working in this space and trying to figure out if, you know, in architecture, we would be taught about universal design. But sadly, we were taught, but it was only up to the idea of like understanding a wheelchair accessible space. Because that's an apparent disability, right? Even the icon that recognizes disability icon is a person on a wheelchair. So now, how do you then also bring other disabilities in the domain? And particularly, we had to realize, and as you're talking about the child with visual impairment, we also had to make so many changes in our own home, you know, like your own house where you have lived. Like, she's lived for like 43 years. And like, suddenly it changes, you know, like the corners start hitting you. The furniture had to be rounded off. We had to remove thresholds from all the spaces, you know, in order to make sure that the house was more inclusive and accessible for her. And this is when you start thinking that you have a person with disability in your space. And hence you start looking at that.
The world differently.
The world differently. And in order to answer your question, you know, would I have done this inherently? I would have done, I would have considered working with persons with disability because that's how we are brought up, right? With the whole idea of, oh, be sympathetic, you know. It's your duty to do something for others. We're always put in that bracket of like, you know, this is a social good. We don't consider this as a habit, right? Like, we always say that, and that's one of my quotes that I put up everywhere, that accessibility should be a habit and it should not be a virtue. It should not be something that you do, oh, one day I will do something like this.
I want to help someone.
You're not helping someone because, and I think the best answer to this is also in understanding the social model of disability, which a lot of countries like the UK and other also follow. And it's about understanding that the society disables the person. Because you're not able to, today, if I need to speak to you, I need this mic, right? And if this mic was not there, we wouldn't be able to record with this particular thing. So I need the equipment, I need the infrastructure in place to support, support myself, right? And the same way, like, so it's not a person who's on a wheelchair, it's not their fault if the ramp is missing. But they want to go to the cinema hall, but like if the ramp is not there, then
how do they go
in that space? Sure. So as you were mentioning about the undulated surfaces that are required, so they're typically known as tactile markers. So the tactile pathways and markers guide them to a certain space. And it could be as simple as leaving your home and going to get groceries. Right? It could lead you to that space. But if that was missing, so now it's not the person's fault, right? But it's about how we as a society make sure that it is inclusive and accessible and move beyond the idea of sympathy to empathy.
Yeah,
no, for sure. There was a conversation she had with me where she was telling about a recent experience she had in Dubai, for example. And over here in India, when there are play areas or creches, they are not always accessible for children with disabilities. So she was just talking about how in Dubai, they call children with disabilities children of determination. And for her, even though she's not, it's her child with disability, she just felt so much more empowered. And she just felt more happy and accepted in that situation that, okay, my child is not being recognized for something that is beyond his, like, beyond his control, but is actually being...
I think, yeah, more than the mother, even for the child, I feel when you're growing up, especially, or even at, like you said, your 75% is acquired, it's a shift in how you see yourself. But if you're empowered with even the nomenclature, which we, or maybe, like, you know, a lot of times we don't value enough, it would make such a big difference, right? So I think, like, we'd love to know about, if we could double down on the nomenclature and the verbiage that's used around.
Sure. So also, like, the journey of this domain, right? Like, it starts with a very dark past of understanding the word handicapped also, right? Like, it's moved from the word handicapped to differently abled, and sometimes they're known as special needs, and like a lot of these wordplay that goes around in this domain. And I've realized that when working with the community, they don't appreciate this a lot, right? You know, because they're like, oh, we don't have any special needs, like it's only a need, you're not able to cater to it, right? It is as simple as I said, right? Agar humna Gujarati ma bolvano pachu chalu karu to, it's a need, right? Right now, my need is, of course, there would be Gujarati listeners to this particular podcast. But like, if I know that my target group is of a certain kind, the people who would be listening to this particular piece would require English as the primary language of communication, then how do I at least set it out for them? So even when it comes to wordplay, right, like about being identified. So as I said, right, in India, we follow the person first approach. So we anything identified as like persons with, and then you place the disability over there, or like, it's like persons with disabilities also. But the same thing, like, so we've been working with British Council and we are the EDI partners, and we did a artist residency of artists with disabilities between Wales and India. And it was like, we send out a call, and the call was like open call for artists with disabilities. And we got a very strong email from, and this was supported by the Welsh government, and we got a very strong email from them saying that, you know, you can't use this word. You can't use artists with disabilities because they don't have anything. They, and the right approach has to be, it has to be tagged as, or it has to be written as disabled artists. And I was like, we wouldn't use that in India because we think that's derogatory. And then I realized and I understood what's the social model of disability. There are people who, in along with their pronouns in their email signature, would also write as person with deafness gained. So rather than saying that person with hearing impairment, there are people who identify as deafness gained. So it's about also being proud of, of your disability, right? Like, so right now also this month of July is the Disability Pride Month. And it is not only about our association of pride with what you're seeing, but like pride in various different ways that one wants to consider that, right?
Also, and the design, can you, like, I saw your post about the correct usage of the design.
So even that, the disability pride flag has changed. The design post 2021 has changed because the previous flag was too jarring for a certain disability group. Like, it was a visual overdose, you know, with the diagonal the colors that were there. Now if you see, the colors are very subdued, they're muted. So it was so funny, somebody messaged us on our LinkedIn when we put that up about the right use of flag. They're like, but we feel the saturation is low. And I was like, no, the saturation is not low, the image is fine, the quality of my image is fine, but that's how the color of the flag is supposed to be. And so that's the level of awareness among the people also, because we have a very shallow awareness or idea about disability, and it needs to change, because we only look at something and we make that first assumption about that, you know, that, oh, visual impairment, right? Oh, okay, everybody is blind. No, in visual impairment, it's a spectrum. Any disability is a spectrum because every body is different, right? And every body would have a different way of adapting, changing, like being modified in different ways for it to work. And hence, when you look at that, like when you look at this entire idea of like, how do we also understand that there are simpler ways of at least getting started with awareness, right? We also look at, like, we work extensively with the schools because we feel that that's the right space to create a generation that would be more inclusive, right? And then hopefully we won't have to go and do these things in corporate spaces where you're like, you know, creating awareness at that age, when if the children are growing up with this idea of inclusion and diversity, it would be fantastic, right? Just for all our listeners, and like even for both of you, if you could tell me five characters that you ever read in your school textbook that were persons with disability. So we've never been made to even understand that or see that approach, right?
Not at all.
So that talks about, or five characters of any storybooks that you read that had disability. So when you're growing up, it's always about the knight in shining armor and the princess.
Like the perfect,
the perfect setup of that.
I guess Little Mermaid was disabled, like a person with disability.
So when you start giving people different scenarios, right? When you start giving children, so one of the other things that we do is we also design children's book around inclusion and accessibility, which is provided to them in different formats, but also to get them to start realizing that world is full of different people. You will interact and then you figure out your ways of interacting with them.
Yeah.
Then it's no longer seen as, oh, the person is different from me. But
yeah.
the person is right out of your storybook, right? Yeah. And you have already interacted with someone before like that. And then you know how to make sure that becomes a part of it.
Yeah. And do you feel landscape-wise, like now that you've given this example, you know, I think past 2 years, especially this year, a lot of the trend, like this is specific to, say, design and in spaces, the word inclusive and accessible was used everywhere. You know, this is the year of inclusive design. This is the, and that means across space, products, blah, blah, blah. But do you see a lot of change in the landscape or in terms of, let's say, even content that's put out, like a need or a push towards making this happen? Or
I feel that there is an intention to change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see that very clearly. Like the kind of corporates that reach out to us for like different trainings or even understanding that. I'm more than happy to do that because they have at least started taking that first decision of like, okay, we would like to consider accessibility.
Yeah.
Tell us how can we do it in the right way.
Yeah.
And I think that is really important because you may start and do something wrong, which may not work out in for the larger community. You might as well reach out to experts or the people who are in the domain to give you the feedback and suggestions for things. So yeah, definitely. And you see so many different examples also, right? Like with Colgate, if you see, like Colgate now has Dolly Singh only for the new advertisement, that whole idea of a perfect smile, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And today you see that it's considered normal. Now it's about also normalizing this in public domain, right? As I said about the spectacles, it's part of your popular culture. It's part of something that's normalized. Nobody looks at like, okay, I remember my grandmother saying that, you know, when she was about to get married, like her father was petrified because she used to wear those soda glasses. Like,
right. And those thick ones.
And they were like, nahin, nahin, ladke walenge, tabhi nikal dena. And it was so funny that first time she removed and she didn't understand the between the father and the father-in-law who's sitting. And so it is funny, but that you can imagine like somebody wearing glasses was seen as such a taboo, right? You know, mm-hmm. ladki ko chashma pehnti hai. And that entire thing now, like, literally nobody
even thinks
twice. You know, it's like your skin right now.
Yeah.
You don't even consider, you want to adorn it. Like, people, the like glasses are getting bigger and bigger and like, you know. Like,
and different, all kinds of
cool designs that are popping up, right?
Both have such different glasses.
So I think that's about like how things should normalize. And I see an intention, but I think it's a long journey where with right intentions and right action, you can change and you can create an impact.
Right.
I think something y'all do, what I read and Co also told me about, was that y'all do access audits for museums, etc. Would love to hear more about what an access audit is for our listeners.
Yeah, I think also, if we can look at it for organizations as well as when you do it for, say, any heritage
any
site.
Space,
any space.
So access audit as such for any space works in a similar profile. It's only about the function of a space that changes and then our solutions to that and recommendations to that change. So an access audit is understanding an existing space that is there and finding areas of non-compliance and also finding area of design intervention.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I need to, like say when we do an access audit of an office, we try to understand that, is there an entry possible in the building with a ramp? Or like if the ramp is not there, how can a person come in? If the person with hearing impairment is greeted at the reception, does the receptionist have basic knowledge of sign language to interact with them? If you are having a person with visual impairment or color blindness coming to work with you, is the space accessible for them? Can they identify washrooms? Can they identify their space? Are there braille signages? Are there tactile orientation maps? So that's a larger understanding of the space that we audit through our checklist of understanding disability wise interventions. And then we provide them with recommendations about what are the things that they can do and change within the workspace, including even making their emergency exits accessible. Because for a lot of spaces that we've seen, the entry inside the space is inclusive, but nobody thinks to that last point of like, in case of an emergency,
what would
happen? Like, you know, you can't drag a person on a wheelchair down or like somebody
down the stairs,
right? Mm-hmm. Then how do you also shift or transfer the person from their wheelchair to an evacuation chair, which is meant to be taken down? How do you strap them? So these are smaller things, but these are very important things that needs to be considered
thought
when you
through.
Are making your space accessible. And larger idea of doing access audit is because a lot of corporates or spaces are keen on hiring persons with disability.
Yes.
Now, if you're keen on hiring a person with disability, is your office space disability hiring ready? That's the question that
that's
we want
great,
to...
I've never thought of that. Yeah.
So that's why where we say that at least start with an access audit. Have your first round of workshops of awareness, sensitization, understanding disability etiquettes, you know, about like how do you
approach
somebody with disability. I can't just like hold, if I'm assisting a person with visual impairment, I can't just hold their hand and drag them through
you
the walkway, right?
Them.
You have to ask them. Consent is such an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or also like, which part of the hand can I hold, you know? So typically you hold them right above the elbow. You ask them to hold you right above the elbow so that when you are moving because of your ball and socket joint, they also understand the movement. That way.
Mm-hmm.
So now, these are certain approaches that we take so that at least they are there in that space.
So, what kind of team would you need to do an access audit? Like, obviously, we know you are an architect and, you know, you've studied, but like who else?
So our team that audits typically has like of course, I go there and along with us, we have our two other designers and one of them is a person with disability.
Right.
So the space is then also is taken
into account
through their perspective also.
Yeah.
So we like one thing that we really believe is that nothing for them without them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Access for All itself is an equal opportunity provider. People who work with us are persons with different disabilities.
Yeah.
And we realize that they need to be part of the mainstream discussion, right? You can't only approach them once your things are done.
Exactly.
But you have them there, then you literally hear from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
And then they tell you the things that you may not even consider, right?
Mm.
So we also do website accessibility audits.
Mm.
And we were doing this for, one of the museums. And typically on a website, you would put things like things to see, things to do, things to eat. And like, well, what is on and those kind of things. And we did an audit and this is like, I'm talking about 2015, 16, when we had just started. And then we went to a person with visual impairment who was assisting us and helping us. And we asked him to like do an understanding using screen reader software and like, you know, whether our suggestions and things that we were proposing, was it correct? And he's like, Siddhant, I've gone through everything, but only one thing, everywhere you're using this word, in order to as you move around, you will see this. And even if I'm using a screen reader software, I don't want to constantly be reminded that, okay, I can't see, but there are so many things.
Right.
And then we change the word to explore.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we also change the content that, you know, if you are going around, you could touch this, you could feel this, you could explore this, as you can hear this, you could smell this. So we made it multi-sensory.
Yeah.
So now these are different ways of changing, right? And that's the time we realize that if we want to work in this domain, we want to work with the people and take them together with us. So that's why our core team is of 4 people, but all with different diverse abilities who are part of our team, and then our extended partners also who work with us.
Yeah. I also found what you did, like it just when you said this, I was reminded the please touch. Like it was just so evocative. can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So while I was completing architecture and things got over and we were just visiting a gallery in Mumbai, I don't want to name them, but I think when we entered a gallery, the curator or the staff there like saw my mother and they were like, they figured out that, you know, she's trying to take support of different things or like, you know, she's trying to touch and feel them because now with somebody with visual impairment, the medium of exploration is touch, right? And typically we are all made to realize that you cannot touch anything in a museum or an art gallery. You have
and
bouncers.
You have to stay,
right? Have to stay like 3 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother has 30% distorted vision. And for her to see something, she really needs to get close to that thing. And they got so petrified that very politely, but in a very disrespectful way, they asked us to leave. They're like, we're very sorry, but you know, you may break something and this is very strong and like this is art and like, that really triggered something in me for the longest time, that how does somebody who is visually impaired then experience these things? Or like, we had stopped traveling because we couldn't go anywhere, and like, there was nothing for her to do. Otherwise, if you're traveling, she's just sitting in one corner. That's not participative or inclusive travel. And as things happened, I got a chance to go and study in Greece. And this it happened. This was my first, like, the aha moment that I came across. And we were going around in the Acropolis Museum, and they saw a sign that said, please touch. And for a second, I realized that I saw something that it should have been, please do not touch. Right? Yeah. Like, why is there a please touch
you
sign?
You thought it was a mistake.
So I'm approaching them, and I was like, is this a mistake? And the gentleman there, like the security guard, like very stern looking, and very politely said, no, my dear, go ahead, touch it. It's it's meant for everyone to touch, feel and experience, you know. And our museum is accessible for persons with visual impairment. And because they can't see the sculptures, we have created objects that they can touch and feel. I was amazed at that, like, and that was like when I was studying then. That day was the day when I realized that, okay, like, I really want this to happen in museums in India, where the please do not touch sign takes over please touch. And that's my, so that was my first ever project with a art gallery, DAG, and we designed a program for them called Abhas, visual arts experience for visually impaired. And that's why where we did these, we started creating tactile renditions of artworks with braille and other things. And that's why you very clearly see a sign that says please touch.
I think it was so powerful and like just so evocative, you know. And I think everybody has had that experience when you go to an art gallery. You feel like I need to stay away.
And there'll be that yellow line and you have to stay behind that.
And that's also about the experience you're giving the person, right? And because everybody itches to touch and feel, right? Like we that's how we are wired, you know, supposed to like feel, because you see something, you want to understand. That's the level of inquisitiveness. And when we had that, like, we've had such fantastic feedbacks from people. Like, we've also had a feedback from like a parent who said that for the first time my child didn't pull me out of an art gallery because they got engaged with something, you know. And that's the power of universal design. When you're designing for a target group, you're actually creating something that's universal, that's inclusive. Like today, anybody and everybody can touch, feel and experience that, right? It is not only meant for persons with visual impairment. Or a simple thing like a ramp, right? There's this classic picture that goes around on internet that you see, like, on a cold winter snowy day, like right outside a school, you have children lined up, and like the person is trying to figure out what should he clean first, like should he clean the ramp or should he clean the stairs of the snow,
right?
And the whole idea is to get you to think that, you know, like if you clean the steps first, only a certain few students can
will
go
be
in.
Able to go up.
You clean the ramp, everyone can go in. So that's the power of universal design. So a lot of my initial TEDx talks were also on this lines of understanding the power of design, because it has the ability to bring about change for a wider group of people.
You
mentioned previously about the access audits. I was just thinking about it. As per our conversation, there are 21 recognized disabilities, but like we discussed earlier, there might be many more that we don't even realize. So when you're doing these audits and you take them back to your to whichever corporation that has requested it. In an ideal world, I feel like we would try and do everything. But like, what are those conversations like with the corporates, that how do they, I wouldn't want to say prioritize, but decide which are the decisions that they want to take, which are the ones that they don't want to take?
True. So also, we are very cognizant of the fact that disability inclusion is incremental. It won't happen. Like, you can't, ideally, you should not start doing everything together over there, right? You can't, because in this domain, you have to understand what needs to happen. Like, it's a process that you need to complete. How do you do that? And also, with a lot of corporates, they have asked us that, can you help us achieve the, like, immediate goals on this, right? Like, because, see, every corporate would have a different setting. There are corporates who have their own buildings, they are free to make changes in that space. But if there are corporates with rented premises in real estate, they can't sadly make those changes. Then what are the reasonable accommodations
that you can make?
So that's why our access audit report gives you reasonable accommodations that you could make in the workspace, you know.
And immediate ones.
Immediate ones also. So that you also are able to understand the importance of changes that can be made in that space. And then you start seeing that, okay, like people are receptive to it. Then you go and do something else.
So what about like when Red Fort, for example, which is such a fascinating example. So I'm obviously you can't change the structure. So how did that and how is that?
So that's a fantastic question, because when I started working, it was a lot of forts and palaces and museums. Mm-hmm. And by its inherent nature, it was supposed to be inaccessible.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so we've also did some work for accessibility at the Mehrangarh Fort.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the core idea of that fort was to protect and not allow the entry and to be inaccessible.
Yeah.
How do you now change the context? And plus, every heritage site has something that is known as SOUV, which means a statement of outstanding universal values.
Okay.
So that also means that, like, what is the visual value of that site? Like, today, I can't have, like, a massive, a massive intervention around Taj Mahal, because it needs to be photographed in a certain way. Like, it should not, like, you know, take away from its values that it stands for, like it is testament of. And hence, then you start looking at what are the ways of design interventions.
Right.
So how do you create something that's, you know, like fitting into the space? So when we were doing something for Jaipur, we had to make sure that the colors were something that were
mixing in with,
and were part of the entire architectural language that was there. The ramps, no ramps were physically installed.
Right.
They were all temporary. So at any point in time you had wanted to remove it, you could remove and preserve the building in its actual state as it was designed for.
Yeah.
And then there are some buildings that are being constructed that are new constructions where you have the possibility of bringing about these changes.
Yeah.
And they are more than happy to, you know, create a ramp, create signages, create other areas, even simple things like providing a quiet room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For employees who are going through invisible disabilities or a part of the neurodivergent spectrum, what are the things that you could provide for them? How do you create that space for them?
Right.
You spoke on right now about heritage sites. So I recently at work, we were discussing how the census just happened this year or is happening, and the questions regarding people with disabilities were completely removed. Now, the last census happened in 2011 and now we are having it in 2023. So just thinking about a whole section of society that's just been eliminated there only, that they have not been considered or counted. Then going to heritage sites from that point of view, like once you do a census, that's how you allocate budgets. And I'm guessing that many of the heritage sites are allocated budgets through the governments of the particular states they are present in. So in your experience, I would want like to know that, we have seen so much change, but then we are seeing something like this, which is so stark and so backward in our opinions, that have you seen a lessening of like the budget that you're being given, or are you seeing that change? Like, I feel like it's going ahead in certain spaces, but going behind in certain.
I think that whole census thing is a completely different topic for a talk, because there's a particular reason why it moved out. Also understanding that post 2016, it has now 21 disabilities. Prior to that, there were only seven disabilities. So a lot of things going on that front, but that is a separate talk. But also in terms of budget allocations for different groups that are needed, right? You see changes of various different kind. Now you're also like, I'm sure within the next couple of years, you will also see that disability itself becoming a separate department in the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
In Maharashtra, we've set the first ministry for disability, right? And likewise, you would soon be having various different directorates of this particular domain in different states. So I think the focus is coming there, but in various different ways.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
I used to have to like build towards it as well. Create allow a space for it as well, because I don't think there's no way with anything you can just go in 100%. All.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. And also one needs to understand that we may soon be like world's most populated country, right? And with like with certain disabilities, we are on the capitals. We are like the capital for vision impairment in the world and like, like that. So I think the focus will come to certain disabilities. But the good thing is that with this listing of 21 disabilities, you start at least getting other disabilities recognized.
And thinking
and
broadly.
And people start thinking about them and start positioning them.
Yeah.
And at least it has helped with conversation starters. Of course, it needs to go way beyond that.
Hmm.
Only a conversation, but it needs to be something that people can utilize in. People can also understand that how, okay, like if I'm going to onboard a person with, you know, who has thalassemia, now how do I provide them with the leaves that they would need for their different medical needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does it become part of the sick leaves that I'm giving with, or like is it a separate leave? And then if I give it to them, how do I work it out for my other employees? So there are multiple questions, and it's a very layered
topic,
you know.
It's also, I feel people also need to be educated in this to know.
Yeah.
For example, if I'm an employee here and I do have this intention, I wouldn't, at this given point, I wouldn't know how to make that decision.
Sure.
And
sure.
Like, do you feel there's lesser people with that knowledge? What I'm trying to ask is, even if people want to make this, say, change, or they have that intention to do it, I feel like there are only those many consultants or those many people with that knowledge to empower. So do you think that that is a current challenge right now?
I feel yes and no. There are people who have very domain specific knowledge. There have been people who've been working even before us doing this, right?
Right.
And there are people who are working, but it only depends at what scale are they working at, which areas, because again, it's a massive country, right?
Yeah.
Like, even if you just pick up saying that you want to work on disability in Mumbai itself, you could you could easily do that. Like, you know, like you could just only focus on that, or like you could have like how we are working. We work across the country and also in other countries around the world, because we've taken that as an approach, right? So it depends on what's the intention of the organization also. How deeper do they want to go into a particular domain, or like they want to work largely
overall
aspects of accessibility. So I think it's an option and a choice of the organization. And there are available resources right now. You know, right now there are multiple ways of getting your resources in place. So I don't see that as a challenge, but what I see a challenge in is the idea of the intention of doing it, right? So if you're really intending to make your workspace more inclusive or accessible, or like your setups more inclusive and accessible, you will figure out ways of doing that. And then it is not that, oh, I couldn't find an expert in that, or like, but there are ways in which people
can
do, right? It is simply by even hiring people with disability.
Yeah.
Who would give you the right
different
perspective,
right? Because then you're hiring them. But again, as I said, right, you are keen on hiring them, but when they come into your space, is
then
your space
you
hiring ready?
That's a very, very important question.
Also, I think we spoke a little about websites, and you had mentioned a great example. Now that the world is becoming more online and there's so many online apps, etc., that are coming to the forefront, we've spoken a lot about like disability in a physical space.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on disability in an online space? Like, we use apps like Instagram, Twitter, all that kind of, many apps. Like, do you think that there are accommodations that are made for people with disabilities, or is that something that can be done?
I think if you see like Instagram or like Facebook or even LinkedIn, it now has provision for your pronouns. It now has a provision for putting an alt text, which could read out for the users who prefer screen reader software. And I think there are design interventions and changes that are happening in that space through this element of UI and UX.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I also teach in a lot of different design colleges on this particular topic, and I am seeing a rise amongst young designers who want to consider it, and also from the industry.
Yeah.
So if you see, like, you know, if you look at any airline websites and all, like, they're just getting simpler and simpler by the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not only for persons with disability. As I said, universal design is universal. It
exactly.
is for everyone. Like, you pick up any website, you start seeing them getting cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
You start seeing, when you start looking at them, there is this idea of, you know, understanding what would be an output if I did that action, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very clear understanding of of a 2 or 3 step intervention. Like, you need to download a GST invoice, click on GST invoice, put down your flight number, PNR, and you have your GST invoice given to you.
Yeah.
Even without, like, initially you have to write down an email, wait for the organization to send it to you, if they send it to you, or like, and all sorts of troubles, right? But today, just by click of things, or it's, even understanding like something like Digi Yatra, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just simplifying it for, like, just imagine that for a person on a wheelchair, or a person with severe disability, how many steps of checking and processing, all that you need to do is your facial recognition.
Yeah.
And then you,
in fact, I feel like digitally, at least from, in like you said, industry-wise, there's a massive, massive push in that sense. And so many organizations I've seen that are dedicated to...
Yeah, because see, also something like, if you, during COVID, right, everybody was on the screen. Exactly. And you had to figure out the ways of making your screen accessible.
Yeah.
Right, so that's why if you see on any of these digital platforms, you'll have captioning, you have like different options for things. Also, where you could position the window.
Mm.
The best part of these the digital mediums of communication is that, largely, if I've seen like from the hearing impaired community, it is fantastic because everybody is a front-facing audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then anybody who needs to lip read can easily understand because everybody is facing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is something that would be difficult if you were
in... Did not think of that.
So, yeah. So and that's why now a lot of talks, discussions still happen on Zoom and on other platforms, right? Because that has become a way of communicating in an effective way for diverse groups of audiences, even like audiences across the country.
Yeah.
What about, like, even, I was just thinking when you said this, like, for some reason, whenever I've seen you, like, talks of the U.S. government or, like, you know, if there any within the Constitution, you'll always have one person who's, you know, trying to decode, doing sign, or, like, any different
sign language,
form. Yeah. But, like, I might be wrong here, but I don't think, like, I've not yet seen that when, like, for example, we have public rallies or there are, you know...
Yeah, it's not that integrated into our system where it's a necessity.
Like, if you see it all the time, like if I'm seeing it on news, if I'm seeing it all the time on, like, say, this...
In concerts, the interpreter.
Then I'm aware. And I think in general, like how I've made this association, people who what they would have that association that, okay, this is a consideration.
I completely agree. And so there are things, like if you look at our key news channels in the country, there are certain hours that are dedicated with a sign language interpreter.
Oh.
Indian Sign Language Interpreter. National did have like a sign language interpreter for a lot of things, right? Also, if you have like the government, any key government officials giving their addresses to the nation and all, sign language interpreters are available on site.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were mentioning, concerts. So just this year, Access for All was the accessibility partner for Lollapalooza India.
Right.
And we had sign language interpreters for Imagine Dragons. We had sign language interpreters for Pratik Kuhar and Yellow Diary. And the best thing, like, of all of that, like, the best thing that I overheard someone saying that, this used to happen. I've seen this in Rihanna's concert.
Yeah, that's the Super Bowl interpreter.
And then they were, and I was like, that's like, I'm super happy, you know, like that people are like, oh, and they were so happy that, oh, this is that we're seeing this in India.
Yeah.
And like, it was like viral on Twitter and all, like our sign language interpreters were like, and everybody was like so fascinated that, oh, like we now have this in our country. So also the recognition to that, right?
Exactly,
and that somewhere somebody would be leading that information to someone who needs that.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the most important thing, that, you know, how do you also present inclusion, right? Because you also want to tell people that, hey, this facility is available.
Hmm.
Please use it, you know, like utilize it. So,
and just a very broad question, but... because, like I'd mentioned earlier, I feel like inclusivity and accessibility has become so interchangeably used for every conversation. Everyone wants to do it. Now, of course, some people intentionally, some people not. But I want to know from you, what would you like define it as?
See, the word access and inclusion, right? Access is very physical driven, like it's more about an accessible infrastructure, it's more about an accessible service, it's more about an accessible facility. And I feel inclusion is a mindset.
Okay.
Mm. Okay. Like, to be inclusive, you don't have to, like, put in a ramp, right?
And yeah.
To be inclusive, you need to have the thought process first. Yeah. And that needs to be your way of thinking about things, right? That has to be your ways of, like, will I use this font? Will it be useful for everyone? Or, like, I need to consider using that font. Like, and then when you use that font, whatever you're making becomes accessible.
Right. Got it.
Right.
So that's the idea of it. And as I said, like, largely for us, we feel that inclusion should not be a virtue. You know, it needs to be a habit. It needs to be something that you do every day.
Normalize.
Not even as a consideration that I'm doing this separately, you know, let me add this. It's not an add-on. Yeah. It needs to be something that's part of already your conceptual existing. Thinking already existing, rather than retrofitting accessibility.
Yeah, fair. Absolutely.
Enough. We have a last question for you. We ask all our guests this. How do you think you are a work in progress?
And also what you're doing. How is that?
Our work is literally in progress. You know, as I said, like, we are only scratching the tip of the iceberg, right? Like, and I feel that accessibility, inclusion, diversity, disability access will always be work in progress, right? Because every new day, something new is coming up in technology. There is something new that's happening with the human body. There is new identifications. There are new ways of adapting to situations. So I think this is one field that's where change is constant, that goes very clearly in this domain. And I feel what Access for All is doing is trying to adapt and trying to figure out ways to play the role of the bridge that we've always been doing in making sure that the facilities are accessible, the services that are made accessible reach out to the people. And then if people have any feedback and grievance, we can, like, loop it into this domain and really bring inclusive design thinking in our work. So I think that's the way we feel we are work in progress.
Absolutely. And what we're going to do is take some resources from you for everyone, including us, who, like, wants to know and learn more.
Sure.
And
sure,
we'll
definitely
link it, you know.
Definitely. Like, our website has resources. Yeah. And also, like, just reach out to us if you need any more details or understand what
100%.
Can be done. Yeah.
But thank you so much for being
thank
on
you.
This podcast. It was honestly really fascinating and really knowledgeable as a whole. And
I
learned
like
a lot.
One of the most important conversations, you know, we've had. And of course, everyone needs to have. And I'm just, again, super grateful that you
thank you.
Agree.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you.